This is episode 2 of Becoming a Strategist. One of the most critical skills for a strategist is strategic thinking. It is the ability to cut through the clutter of a messy world and see the core issue in any situation. But beyond that clarity, strategic thinking is also the ability to identify the highest leverage opportunities around a core issue. But did you know that your natural thinking methods make you less strategic? Yes, the way you normally think on a day-to-day basis makes you less strategic. Research has shown that there are a number of thinking methods we use naturally that make us do exactly the opposite of being strategic. In this episode, we will talk about these thinking traps that make you less strategic in your thinking. You may be surprised how often you fall into these traps. Before we get into some decision traps, I'd like to share a few examples where major companies have made big mistakes. That's just to show you that it's not just you and me who make these mistakes. The big companies, managers in very critical positions who also fall into these traps. So first example that I want to share is that of Coke and Coke's reaction to Pepsi. Coke, as you know, is one of the best brands in the world. It became one of the most loved brand because of the brand managers at Coke who deliberately built that brand equity over a century. Now, what does Coke really stands for? Well, it stands for good times, holidays, family, and of course, America. This is because over the years, Coke advertisements use these images to build this connection between the brand and what it stands for. And this is how Coke became a 800-ton gorilla in the market for beverages for the longest time. And then suddenly a new kid on the block appeared, Pepsi. As a new kid, Pepsi wanted to become big and successful. And like any other company in that situation, it searched for opportunities to become more successful. Obviously, in such situations, companies search for places where they have a natural right to win, where they are superior to the competitors. And Pepsi's search bore fruit. It found that in a blind test, consumers liked Pepsi more than they liked Coke. Now that was a big opportunity for Pepsi to take on Coke. And that's how the Pepsi Challenge was born. The Pepsi Challenge claimed that we challenge you to a blind test and we guarantee you that you will like Pepsi more than Coke. Now, this was sensational. How do you think Coke reacted? Well, they reacted in a big way. So Coke sent its scientists to build a formula where Coke would be better than Pepsi. Well, and as the wise words go, seek and you shall find. Coke found that formula. Coke found a formula in which its formula was superior to that of Pepsi in a blind test. Now, that led to the launch of New Coke. How do you think the consumers reacted to this better tasting Coke? Well, the outcome was not pretty. People hated the fact that their old Coke was gone. There were protests and calls for boycotting Coke. People were calling up and jamming the 1-800 lines for Coke. And during all this chaotic time, Pepsi stepped in and gained market share. Now, Coke is in the business of branding and consumer understanding. But you know, it made a huge mistake. The game was never about how good Coke tasted. It was all about how you felt when you drank Coke. And those feelings had something to do with the old taste of Coke and with all the imprinted images in the minds of the consumers. When you change that Coke taste, I guess that particular connection was also somehow diluted. Now, Pepsi's challenge was an attempt to change the game by making taste a barometer of consumer preferences, Pepsi tried to change the rules of the game. The mistake Coke made was that it walked into that trap. By accepting the new rules of the game, Coke went from a very advantageous position to a position of disadvantage. This was not a very strategic move. But you know what? Coke is not alone in this situation. Many other companies have made similar mistakes. Let me take you back to 1969, when General Electric was in a lot of businesses, so it asked a top level team to evaluate which businesses GE should keep and which it should get rid of. Now, this team was looking at three businesses: nuclear power, jet engines, and computers. And you know what? Team came back saying that computer business should be the one that GE should eliminate. And rest is history. Within the next decade, computer business took off in a major way. But you know what? GE was not a part of this growth. Similarly, Atari and HP missed getting in on Steve Jobs' early work. Jobs used to talk about his encounter with Atari, and this is what he said. So we went to Atari and said, "Hey, we've got this amazing thing. Even built it with some of your own parts. And what do you think about funding us? Or we'll give it to you. We just want to do it, pay our salary, and we will just come work for you." And Atari said, "No." Then we went to HP and they said, "Hey, we don't need you. You haven't even gone through college yet." Now, I cannot go through the minds of the people who made these statements, but it may have something to do with how Jobs used to look at that time. It is a well-known and documented fact that Jobs used to look more like a hippie back then than a legendary innovator who would eventually change the world. So stepping back, we saw some major mistakes companies make. If you reflect on your own decisions in your past, I'm sure you can find times when you were not strategic. I can guarantee you, I have been non-strategic in many, many situations. So the question is, why do we make these decision mistakes? What traps prevent us from being strategic? Let's find out in the next segment. I have asked this question to thousands of participants in my strategic thinking workshops. Why do people go wrong with their decision making? What makes us less strategic at times? And people often have similar set of answers, which goes somewhat as follows. Number one, we have a lot of information overload, which can prevent us from processing all the information. Number two, there is rapid change going on in the world, so a decision that was right yesterday becomes wrong today. Third, the amount of uncertainty that we face can make us, you know, take some wrong choices. Fourth, conflicting goals can sometimes make people choose one goal over the other, and this can lead to a suboptimal choice on one of the goals. Another answer that comes up is that sometimes group processes, like groupthink, can make an entire group become less than rational. When the group ignores significant evidence and takes decisions without that evidence. And finally, some people think that it's a lack of learning, that people have not made use of some of the past experiences in making new choices. Well, this list often goes on, but these five or six reasons are a fairly good representation of what people come up with. I think all these are accurate, but there is a deeper reason why we become less than strategic at times. If you think who we are as a species, you will find that, you know, we have spent thousands of years as hunters and gatherers. Now, sitting in offices and working on computers with significant analysis is a more recent phenomenon. How would a hunter think? Well, that thinking, no matter what it is, should rely very heavily on pattern matching. If you are a hunter and you see a striped object move in the periphery of your vision, you have to make a very quick decision. It may be a tiger and you need to run for your life. If as a hunter, you start to calculate the probabilities and Bayesian estimates of how likely is it that a tiger would be there, I guess you would agree that you won't survive. So using the Darwinian logic, if there were strategic thinkers among the hunters and gatherers, among in our forefathers, well, you would agree that they would not survive. They would have all perished, because in that kind of thinking, at times when they needed to take action, they may have been in less than desired situations. So what really made us survive as a species is our ability to be very quick at pattern matching and taking action. But now, we find ourselves in a totally different world. You know, there is almost zero likelihood that a tiger will jump out from your office window when you are having your morning coffee. Although I read recently that a woman found an alligator in her bathroom in Florida recently. Well, but the big idea is that our decision making in our nature is heavily defined by our hunter-gatherer history. And that's how we make decisions today. And that's what makes us a little less strategic in our thinking. Now, today we live in the world of big data, regression equations, game theory modeling, and so on. So in these times, we need somewhat different way of thinking. And that's why the need for strategic thinking has become more important in the life, in the world that we live today. In the next segment, let us look at how our strategic thinking short circuits when we are in decision-making situations. In the last 30 to 40 years, researchers in behavioral decision theory have uncovered an amazing amount of evidence that shows how flawed we humans are in our thinking and decision-making. When I was a doctoral student at Duke University, I came across enormous literature on cognitive errors in decision-making. Since our PhD program in management relied heavily on three pillars, I was really fortunate to have learned from some of the giants in the field. Back then, our PhD program required me to go through three pillars of management. First was behavioral decision theory, second was organization behavior, and the third was organization theory. This is the reason why my worldview became heavily influenced by psychology and organization theory. And this is the reason why my first book, The Dark Side of Innovation, connects behavioral decision theory with strategy and innovation. So coming back to the biases in our decision making, there are actually dozens of them. But let me share a few surprising ones with you. The first one is called a confirmation bias. It is also called a prior hypothesis bias. Basically, what we know is that we often rely on an early hypothesis in a situation. And when we go look for data to find out what the reality is, we end up selectively using data to conform to that original hypothesis. This can work in many ways. For example, if you believe someone who reports to you is a bad manager, and it may be a precognitive impression that you have, but then you go and collect data on that person using a 360-degree feedback method, and you come back, you are likely to selectively use that feedback. And you are likely to use the feedback that will conform to your original hypothesis. Now, this may be what was at play when Atari and HP managers just refused to fund Steve Jobs or even have him work with them. It may have to do with something around how he looked at that time. Another example of a bias is called availability bias. This happens when recent events color your overall judgment. So when you make a decision, your mind actually doesn't work like a computer that searches for everything that is there on a disk. It actually searches until it finds something useful, and then it stops. So instead of searching for all the information, it just stops at the first value, or maybe a little beyond that, depending on what your thinking style is. And in this situation, what happens is, whatever has happened recently becomes more available in your mind, and therefore it colors your decision making. So when a few shark attacks happened in Florida, at that time, around that time, people begin to rate shark attacks as a higher risk for death than they really are. This is also the reason why, close to your annual appraisals, it may be a good strategy to get some more superlative results. A similar example of a biased thinking is called anchoring and insufficient adjustment. An example will help explain this better. If I ask a group of people, is population of Indonesia greater than 25 million? Assuming they don't really know what the real answer is. Some will say yes, some will say no. People will be, in general, non-committal. But what's interesting is that after some time, if I ask them, estimate the population of Indonesia, and then I take the average estimate of that entire group, surprisingly, it comes close to 25 million. In this sense, that group's estimate was anchored at 25 million. And after that, they didn't really change it, even if I gave them more information of how many islands there are. So that's called anchoring and insufficient adjustment. Another example of a bias in which we're not really making decisions in the best possible way. Another example of a bias is called overconfidence bias. When a group of people are asked to rate their own ability in driving as average, above average, or below average, there is an interesting outcome. 80% of people rate themselves as above average in driving. Now, you know, it is a mathematical impossibility if 80% of people think they are above average. And the last example of a decision bias that I want to share with you is a really interesting one. So let me explain it to you again with an example. People are asked this question. Person A enjoys puzzles, is mathematically inclined, and is a very introverted kind of a person. And he was selected from a group of 70 lawyers and 30 engineers. Please guess this person's profession. A, a lawyer. B, an engineer. What do you think? Well, most of the people across many, many groups that I have asked this question chose engineer as the profession of this person. Now, you know what they are doing is they're looking at the description of someone who is mathematical, loves puzzles, is introverted, and they match it with their impression of what an engineer is supposed to be. What they miss is that the most important data point in this question was that it was a person from a group of 70 lawyers and 30 engineers. So they don't use the probability based on this data and instead rely on pattern matching based on the impressions of lawyers and engineers that they have. This is called ignoring the base rate. This usually works when you ask people how long it'll take them to finish a project and they consistently overestimate the time that they will take. They miss the amount of time they normally take on those projects or what the history of similar projects show. So this is again a bias that keeps, we see every day, you and I fall into this trap. Well, I can go on and on with many more thinking traps, but I guess these examples should have made you believe that we are all in the same boat here. We make mistakes in decision making. We don't automatically get to the core issue in a situation or find the most important levers. And you know what? There is a common thinking style in organizations. I'm sure you've seen it. Due to an ever-increasing speed of business life, very often people begin to solve a problem as soon as they see it. I call this a deep dive method of solving problems. And when you do that, you know what happens? You basically fall into all the traps that I talked about and many, many more that I didn't talk about. And this is how you become less than strategic in your thinking and decision making. But there is a good news, and that is that you can actually learn to be a strategic thinker. I have taught strategic thinking to thousands of people, and I have personally seen people improve their ability to become more strategic after going through a few workshops. So if you want to take one lesson from everything that I have talked so far, it would be this. Learn to be more deliberate in your thinking. Don't go into deep dive. It'll help you become more strategic. And beyond that, you can use a few important tools in strategic thinking. But you know, we will talk about that in the next session. Stepping back, you can take away three key lessons from this episode. Number one, companies and managers make more major decision mistakes and more often than what you think. We saw many examples of these mistakes in this episode. Number two, we are wired in a way that makes us fall into decision traps and act less strategically than we would like to. And number three, there are many decision-making styles that we normally use that make us fall into many decision traps. And that is how we become less strategic and ineffective decision makers.